We're dancing, by the way. You can't see us.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jim.
I'm Brian.
I'm Theo.
And this is the Concept Crucible Podcast.
I love that delay in audio.
It happens sometimes.
Yeah.
And today's topic is things you did as a child.
Little child.
Being before the age of majority.
Yeah, that actually reminds me now that we were talking about this on a previous podcast where, things you did before you were an adult or something like that, and I had a hard time trying to figure out what it was because, like, of the protracted youth and everything like that. So that's kind of funny. Yeah, before you turn 20, pretty much.
So the icebreaker is what is your favorite place or trip you went on as a kid? Like camps or vacations or things like that. Theo, we made you go first last time, so I'll make Huck go first this time because he's drinking water.
Sounds good. Wipe the water off my mustache. My favorite...
For listeners, Huck has a mustache.
I do have a mustache. I am ruggedly handsome with a beard and mustache. I wear glasses. I have a fairly light complexion, but it goes red because I have a very vascular system.
You like long walks on the beach?
Long walks on the beach. I have dark hair that's currently styled with gel left over from yesterday because I'm a dirty bastard and I never shower. But I put on enough deodorant that it doesn't bother Jim in the slightest.
So what you're saying is that Huck is already... You're like a child now.
Yes. And we are too far into the podcast for us to restart, so let's continue on with this tangent, or break this tangent and continue on with the podcast. So, my favorite trip that I ever went on, I was in Army Cadets, and we'll probably cycle back to that a little bit later on in the podcast, but I went to a series of summer camps, and the year of 2000, or I should say the summer of 2005, I want to say, I think it was before I started university.
God, you're so...
I know. I went on an Outward Bound course. It was actually a Leadership and Challenge course was how they classified it. And it was the old Banff course, but it got relocated to the Rocky Mountain National Army Cadet Summer Training Center, which was outside of Canmore, Alberta, I believe. So I was in Alberta for 6 weeks, and each of the weeks we did a number of mountain-based activities. So it was... 1 week of mountain biking, 1 week of a glacier assault, 1 week of whitewater kayaking, 1 week of rock climbing, like rock face climbing, and 1 week of hiking, and then the final week was a leadership week where we did, you know, leadership activities, group activities. So yeah, 6 weeks of awesome. I nearly drowned. I had a very hard time climbing rocks as a large kid. I lost a hell of a lot of weight on that trip. I failed my first mountain challenge. I learned a lot about myself. You know, you lose. And I learned how to avoid biking through cow paddies because the training center was adjacent to a bunch of, like, mountain ranches and whatnot. And there was just cows everywhere. And there was just cow shit everywhere. So, it was amazing.
Yeah, cow shit everywhere sounds pretty awesome.
Totes.
Sounds like Cooper.
Sounds like... I can't wait to go to Scotland.
Theo, how about you? You mentioned some sort of creepy amusement park.
You laughed when I said this.
I will laugh again.
I've just worked out why I remember this holiday so much. I was about 6 or 7... We went to this place called Flamingoland, which is like a sort of holiday park. We took a caravan, our touring caravan, and the holiday park was attached to this little theme park. It was kind of, like, now it's more bigger rides, but the rides at the time were all kind of geared towards kids, like those little tiny, like, little caterpillar roller coasters and things. And it was all little rides that kids could go on, and once you're in the park, you kind of had free rein to go in the amusement park. So we spent our days in there, and at night you went to the little clubhouse, and it was like shows on, and like magic shows and stuff. And I think the reason this one stands out to me so much is not the fact that, like, I was finally big enough to go on all the rides without my mum having to be there. That's the summer I learned to ride a bike. Because my dad had for weeks, in fact probably months, kept taking me to the beach nearby and making me cycle along the tide line. The idea being if I fell off, I got wet, so don't fall off. And I was really bad at it. I was really bad at it because he kept yelling at me for falling off. So I got really scared. And for me, riding a bike was just the thing I was absolutely terrified of. Mm-hmm. And like we went to the caravan place, and my mom's like, "We'll take the bikes because you might want to cycle about." And I was like, "Yeah, whatever, I'm going to use my bike." But while they were setting up the awning stuff on the caravan and weren't paying attention to me, I was like, "I'm going to try this bike thing because I think I can do it." And I managed to do it because my dad wasn't yelling at me for 5 minutes. So basically, I made myself over this fear of riding my bike that summer. And I was pictures of me and my sister like cycling around the park and stuff. So I think that's why, because it's kind of like I overcame this big challenge I kind of had. And it was a really cool place to go on holiday.
Neat.
So that was one. Very cool. It's amazing what happens when you don't have somebody yelling at you and putting pressure on you.
Not making you.
So the guy whose favorite holiday was going to a 6-week army cadet camp.
Yeah, but I'm like, I wasn't riding along a tideline falling in the sea every time I fell off my bike. It was nice.
At least it wasn't a trial by fire, literally, where you're biking along, I don't know, a volcano or something like that.
I've spread these Legos along the edge of the driveway. Okay. Don't fall.
Yimmy.
Oh, yeah, me. When I was about 7 or 8, I was involved in Big Brothers. Specifically, I was a little brother. And Big Brothers is, for those who don't know, there's an organization for boys without fathers. So people who are kids who are part of a single-parent family. They have a sister organization, which is Big Sisters. And they have their own summer camp. And I went. It was called Camp McGovern. And it was easily the most transformative experience of my childhood. And I would go to that camp every year, sometimes twice a year, from like age 8 or 9 until age 14. Like, no question. There was going to be times in the summer when I was gone to Camp McGovern, and it was a huge part of my life. Because it was a camp entirely for kids who were part of Big Brothers. So every guy I met there was from a single parent family, like mine. I mean, not always exactly like mine, different socioeconomic class, different, sort of intersections of all kinds of things. Some of them were like guys whose dad had died, or whose parents had split up, but they still knew their dads. But as a kid who was basically like everybody I knew had two parents, it was really cool to go to a camp where everybody was kind of like me. And we knew, like, you have that moment at summer camp where you're sitting around with a bunch of people and you have no idea, like, when you first meet them, especially when you're a kid and you don't know how to meet people, especially if you're an introvert like me. You're just like, well, we don't really have anything in common, and et cetera. And your counselors usually try and see that. They do mixer games and things like that. But there, we all knew we had one thing in common. And it helped us get past a lot of that sort of weird awkwardness and form some neat friendships. That would last for a week. And then you would promise to write to each other, because that was before there was an internet. And then you never would, because you were children. But it was a super good time. Like, we did all kinds of leadership activities. We went into crevices. We did all kinds of things. I recall getting super scared sometimes. And it was the place where they introduced me to things like archery and canoeing and all kinds of outdoor stuff. I learned how to win at hide and seek. You just have to be very quiet. Hide in obvious places. Be very quiet. I know being very quiet does not seem like it's part of my skill set. But let me tell you, I hide like a motherfucker.
Now I'm terrified.
I'm not fucking Batman.
No, I'm just like hiding behind things and jumping out. I mean, it's very easy to scare the shit out of me.
No. Like, in the context of hide and seek, my favorite memory is always when I was a counselor in training there in my last year, and my hiding place was, I was just laying in a bush like right next to the home base, completely still. Like there, the home base was like 3 feet from me. There were kids who were hunting me, sitting at it chatting, and I could hear them. And it lasted until some kid chucked a rock into the bushes. It landed like a foot from my head. And the counselor who was watching home base and sort of overseeing everything was like, don't chuck rocks into the bushes. And they're like, why not? He's like, there could be somebody hiding in there. And I'm like, crap. And I start rolling down the hill as the kids run into the bush. I was so mad that they blew my hiding spot, but it was such a good spot.
It's amazing.
But yeah, so I mean, summer camps and you know, army cadets and things like that are kind of, what kinds of things were you involved in as a child? Like, everybody goes to activities because you don't have a job, unless you do have a job.
Mm-hmm. I had a job until I was 13. I had time for them.
I didn't have a real job until I was like 18.
Yeah, I think my first job was 2 weeks, but it was like when I was 12 or 13. Between grade 8 and grade 9. Mm. Whatever that was.
Yeah, I had a couple of those.
Corn detasseling.
Ooh. So Theo, what kind of stuff were you involved in as a kid?
The biggest thing I got involved in as a kid was actually the brownies. I was super into the brownies. Like, oh, it was ridiculous levels. I still have 2 best brownie trophies I got. It was summer and autumn 1997. I remember the dates since we talked about it earlier on.
So I went to high school with some people who were, quote, super into the brownies. They were stoners.
Thanks. 8-year-old me, thank you for
that.
What
I'm asking is, when you say you're super into the brownies,
you know,
are
how
you,
I
referring
like
to bank nugs?
No. I was 8. Behave.
The Hootie Mac.
No, I mean, like, you know, like, when you, like, it's also like brownies is like a younger set of the Girl Guide movement, and it's always, you know, when you go to things like that, it's always this kid who has like all the badges and wins all the inspections and super. Yeah, that was me.
I'm familiar with that kid and their lunch money.
Yeah, like our uniform at the time, it has changed since then. At the time, was you had a sash to put your like your badges on, you like got your badges for different activities. I had 2 sashes. I had so many badges. I was a sixer. Our six was the Kelpies. I still remember that. I was leader of the Kelpies. We were 3rd Cooper. I still even remember the name of the pack. Like, I got to help with, like, people doing their promises and doing, like, colour party and stuff. When we did, like, the gala day, it was my dad's lorry we used for the float. We went on camp. My mom was the cook because I was so into it. Yeah. No, brownies was a huge part of my life for a long, long time. I went to the guides afterwards as well, but, like, the brownies was the one I spent a lot of time working on. Mm-hmm. Like, I can still even remember projects and stuff I did for badges and that. That's how into it I was. Like 19 years later, I can still remember the stuff I did.
Wow.
But I, like, the one of the cool things as well, like, so I went to brownies and went into guides. And just after I went to the guides, we went to Pat's Lodge, which is, like, the world guiding house in London. And there was a thing on one of the tables for pen pals, and I put my note in the thing for the pen pal. I still talk to my pen pal this day. It's 16 years later, and we still talk to each other. She's in Las Vegas now. She was living in London at the time, and her dad was in the Air Force, so she moved about a bit. But she's in Las Vegas now, and we still talk. So, like, yeah, like, that whole, like, the guide movement, that was a massive part of me as a kid. And when I finished that, I went and played music 7 days a week in every band I could come across. So I was kind of, as a kid, I was like a lot busier than I am now. It's a bit ridiculous. But yeah, no, like, even now I get thinking about it, I don't even know what woman uniform I had. I can see in my head, I can see pictures of me in my uniform. In fact, like, I remember a couple of years ago, I can't remember why, I had to go and see my old guide, kind of my old guide leader, still guide leader, Brunel's still there. And I had to go see her for some reason. And when I got there, she sort of laughed, and she went to the cupboard where we used to keep our supplies, but there was different groups in the hall. We had a cupboard each. When she opened the cupboard, the door inside the door was just covered in pictures of stuff we did, and I was in about 90% of the pictures. Because I was involved in every activity they did.
So we will do you the favor of not digging up one of those pictures to put as our featuring image.
I don't think I have any pictures. I don't think I have the pictures. But
So, Huck, you were also in Scouts?
Yeah. I went through the boys' equivalent, so I did Beavers. Then I did Cubs, and then I had graduated from Cubs and was about to start Boy Scouts. I too had a lot of badges. I didn't have two sashes, but maybe because I am normal size and Ted's Hobbit size might be a little different. I had, but my front and back of my sash were full of badges.
Fuck all of you.
I was tall for a kid.
Okay, that's fair. I do remember that badges, a series of badges had been added midway through my Cubs career. So, and I know you're a couple years younger than me, so I'm not sure if you had a similar kind of proliferation of badges. I think I finished with only missing four of the badges. I think I got almost all the rest of them at the time.
Our one got changed after I left. Like, I know, like, they changed the badges and they changed the uniforms. Mm-hmm. And they changed the system through which you get your badges.
Mm. So, yeah, I have a sneaky suspicion my mother still has mine. But I remember stumbling across a bunch of old Cub Scout books. And I don't know if they're mine or if it was just ones because I'm a book pack rat. But so anyways.
I have my name all over them. But yeah, they're definitely mine.
So then I, as I said, I graduated up into the Boy Scouts for Canada, but that was the time when my mom finished her nursing diploma and she got a job in the States. So we moved to the States and I did a year of Boy Scouts in the US, and then after that moved to Texas, didn't do anything. Then I moved back to Canada, and I didn't join Army Cadets until my grade 9 year of high school. I was a little late starting. I was about a year ahead of everybody in my class. So I joined Boy Scouts, or sorry, Boy Scouts, Army Cadets.
They're a little different.
A little very different. I joined Army Cadets for 5 years, because, yeah, I got my five-year medal the year that I left. I aged out. Yeah, and I think that covers my kid years. I was involved in a couple other things. The Duke of Edinburgh Award Program.
Edinburgh.
Are you guys talking about Edinburgh?
Do you Edinburgh?
Oh.
Shots fired!
Oh.
So I was involved with that, but the big heavy stuff of that came in my 20s. I think I joined before I turned 20, but like my trip to Kenya was when I was 21 or 22. So
doesn't count.
Yeah, that part of it doesn't count. But I joined when I was in Army Cadets, and you age out at age 19. Basically, as soon as you're old enough to drink in Ontario, you're done. They kick you out.
You're old enough to join the real army then.
Well, in our corps, our tradition is they buy us a beer stein, a pewter beer stein. They engrave it with your information and whatnot, and then the bottom's a glass bottom, so it's always like bottomless kind of deal.
Ah.
So, it's strange to think how much we encourage consuming alcohol based on that token gesture.
Yeah, there's a culture of drinking.
Yeah. I think those were the main things that I was involved in, activities. And I did a lot of other sports teams and stuff. You know, I was in swimming and whatnot. But we'll get down to, like, the games we played later on.
Fair enough. My childhood, I also was in Beavers. And I spent a year or so in Cubs. I had a total of, like, four badges. My mom was a boss Beaver leader and Cub leader. Which was good, because that was what allowed us the sort of wherewithal to go. Otherwise, we couldn't afford uniforms or anything like that. I wore a uniform from a Cub museum the entire time I was there. And then I moved to Kitchener, and I stopped doing all that, because there was nothing in the area for me to do. Like, it was here, but it was far enough away that I would have had to go with an adult, and my mom was working nonstop nights.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no way that was going to happen. So, yeah, no, my involvement in stuff didn't. It started with things like karate. I studied Weichiro karate for about 7 years. Learned to break boards and not to bust my head on stuff. But, you know, I spent a bunch of time in school in drama. Drama was my jam until I was like 15. And that was my second. I can't remember if it was my first or second time getting thrown out of high school. I want to say second. It was my second time getting thrown out of high school when I was like, I got to get out of drama. Quote from Past Jim, "There's no money in drama," says the guy who got 2 degrees in philosophy. What I'm saying is Teenage Jim's an idiot. But he was really self-conscious about it. I joined choirs my last couple years in school because the music teacher found me at school at 6 in the morning for some reason, because I would come in that early because I was just weird and bored. And I'd get up early. And that was when the choir would practice. And I would like sing along and wander around the halls. And he'd be like, "Join the fucking choir!" I'm like, okay. And I did. And it was great. I joined every choir that school had. As soon as I realized that singing was a thing I loved to do, I could do it in a choir, and then I would become self-conscious about it for the next 10 years. No, the big thing for me, weirdly enough, I didn't mention this in the pre-show. I, on purpose, didn't mention it. When I was about 16, I started vampire LARPing. And the people I met doing that are people I'm still friends with. Yeah, right? Right? I was leaning off the frame because he's embarrassed to be in here. Yeah, no, when everyone, like, everyone
still
else...
I still have friends I met LARPing I still talk to.
Yeah. When I No, when all my other classmates were out, like, getting... Or they were drinking underage and meeting girls and doing whatever else, I and... Everyone I knew was down at the local university pretending to be vampires. I remember walking through that space years later, like when I was about 27, with a friend of mine who had just moved here from the United States, and we met up with her boyfriend, who's a good friend of mine from those days. And still is. And we looked at each other and he's like, "What the fuck were we thinking? Why did we ever think this was cool?" And I don't have a good answer for him, and I didn't then and I don't now. But I do know that I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. These are the crew of people who later in life I would go on to run headshots with. Mm-hmm. These are the crew of people who later in life I work with them, I play with them, I hang out with them. You know, they are good people, and I love them dearly. They're the kinds of people who you're stuck with them for the rest of your life, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But vampire LARPing.
I was an elf.
That's, No, ours was like vampire. There was a werewolf game that ran, there was a very brief Fae game. I ran a couple of LARP games. That's where I got into, like, seriously into role playing. Mm-hmm. And where I cut my teeth on it was I spent 5 years running games for, like, you know, 25, 30 people, and then was like, you know what? I'm just going to run D&D.
Mm-hmm. And we got to say,
for,
like, we would,
14 years.
Like, on a Saturday when we're heading out, we'd always get the bus at the same time because we knew it was the same driver was on. And he kind of got used to this bunch of weirdos getting on the bus dressed up and getting off at the woods and wandering away.
Yeah, but when
you've
got elves, you're like bus for LARPing, right?
Yeah, he just didn't even question it. He's just like, okay, guys, get on the bus. Hurry up. Come on.
You know, like, vampires, it's wall to wall black trench coats, sunglasses, leather.
Oh, no, I had a cloak and everything. It's great.
No, it was a good time. Like I said, I wouldn't trade it for anything. And looking back on it is weirdly one of the most important, like, formative experiences that I have in my older childhood years. So one of the things we noticed during the pre-show, you may not have noticed, but Theo is from Scotland.
Woo!
And TV, especially for children, is super different when there's a whole ocean in between you. Which is weird because you can send TV signals across the ocean now.
Right.
But once upon a time, you could not. And during that fateful time, we were children. So what did you watch as a kid?
I was going to make the slight note that there's enough of a gap between you and me that I watched the stuff I start remembering was like very 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, like my favorite show, the one I always go back to when I was a kid, was just called Fireman Sam. And it was like the same idea as Postman Pat. It's Postman Pat, he does his job. Fireman Sam is the same sort of models. And they were set in this fictional Welsh town called Pontypandy, which I think is based on Pontypridd in the Rhondda Valley. And yeah, it was just like, it was the town. I remember there was this kid called Norman who was always getting in trouble because he was always trying to do stuff to look cool or to like get pocket money or something. And usually whatever he did ended up with the fire brigade having to come out because he caused that much trouble. But I think the reason I kind of latched onto that one was because my dad has friends from near there, so they sounded like my dad's friends. And when I was very little, I was like, I know people like that. And it kind of, in my head, I was like, yes, this is really cool. Fireman Sam was a big one. And things like, if you guys know what Pingu is?
Yes.
I know all of it. I'm not familiar enough.
I know me some.
Pingu was a big thing in our house.
Is that the Penguin Claymation?
Yeah!
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if I watched it, but recently on the social network, somebody mixed that with the thing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there's a Slipknot, which is always Slipknot guys replaced with Pingu heads. Pretty great.
That's awesome.
Yeah, Pingu Fix, Spot the Dog, Thomas the Tank Engine. Like, there was a time recently my dad and I had a fight over the control one Saturday morning because I wanted to watch a cooking program and he wanted to watch Thomas the Tank Engine.
So in Britain it's Thomas the Tank Engine, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just like shorts of Thomas the Tank Engine with the narrator.
Yeah. Who was Ringo Starr.
So, in Canada and America, because I remember that show, but that show is Shining Time Station.
Mm-hmm.
It's a half an hour program. There's a subplot that runs through it with kids, because the host of Shining Time Station, the conductor, was George Carlin.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then they used those Thomas the Tank Engine shorts with Ringo Starr's narration.
Yeah. And then later on, I think it was Alec Baldwin after George Carlin.
Nice.
It was one of the Baldwin brothers.
Yeah, like when Thomas came on, it was usually the show two of the shorts and like the 20-minute slot or whatever it was. The other one I really remember from primary school age, which is up to like 12, there was a show called Budgie the Little Helicopter. And it was
like
always...
Little Helicopter?
Budgie the Little Helicopter.
Oh, Budgie. I thought you said Budget the Little Helicopter. He's only got like 3 out of the 4 propellers.
Jeez.
It was the same sort of idea as Thomas. It was like anthropomorphized, like these machines, but they were cartoon rather than like.
So how about you? What did you watch as a kid? I mean, obviously Power Rangers.
Yeah, I watched Power Rangers. I was pretty big. I grew up when Fox Kids was a really big heavy thing. So, Life with Louie, Ninja Turtles, the X-Men, Spider-Man cartoons, Eek the Cat. And then I moved to the States, watched a bit of the Nickelodeon stuff. So you had Doug. Also, I think it was ABC too, with like Recess, Hey Arnold. You know, just those slew of Nickelodeon shows, Rugrats, Animorphs when it was on because I was heavily into the books.
Right.
That's. The ones, there's probably a hell of a lot more, and I imagine after the show is done filming, I'm probably going to think of a ton
like,
more.
Like a ton, because it's just going to flood back.
It's just going to, and thankfully, I'm finding a lot of internet stations that are just rebroadcasting the old broadcasts. You know, just 100% streaming all the time. It's kind of fun to stumble across those ones. I can't think of too much. And then I'd also watch after school Judge Judy and the People's Court.
See, our one was like that was my mom really liked the Ricky Lake show, and it was on at like 4:30. Yeah. So like we get home, we get to watch our shows, and then she's like, "Off the TV, my turn now." And that we come on, we'd be like, "What?"
Yeah, I'd get home and my stepmom would be watching daytime soap, so like General Hospital. Sunny and his continuous plot lines. The View, if I played hooky from school, they'd be The View. Regis and Kelly, you know, those shows. But those weren't really kids' shows, and that's not really what I watched a lot of. But yeah, big into Power Rangers and any of those, like, those import shows as well. So, like, I think VR Troopers was imported, yep. But Big Bad Beetleborgs, I think, yep. It was only the costumes were imported, but none of the... Well, I don't know. They might have had some of the fight scenes ported over. I think the only one that was uniquely North American was the Mystic Knights of Tir-na-Nog. I think that was the one that they took the Power Rangers idea of calling for magic armor and then just tried their own thing with it.
Which I made it probably, Irish for some reason.
Well, because that's what you do when you have King Finfin or something like that. The King of the Fairies.
No idea.
Yeah. So it was definitely if young Hercules and Xena and the regular Kevin Sorbo Hercules, if they could call for magic armor, it was probably that the love child of those two ideas.
Oh man!
So
horrified.
I'm telling you, like, I should probably cut it there because I'm going to start remembering more and more stuff. So, Jim, what did you end up watching as a kid?
When I was a young kid, I did not have a TV for a long time.
And now we all feel bad.
No. I absorbed TV vicariously through all the other children I knew. I remember distinctly my first grade teacher as I was, like, because I was super into, like, Friday the 13th and Hellraiser and shit like that, and my first grade teacher sat down with my mom and was like, your son watches too many movies. And my mom's like, we do not have a television, where is he seeing these, because that's impossible. And it was, but other people's parents let them watch those movies, and I sort of sucked it all in. But eventually we, you know, got a TV. And before we had one, I would always hang out at my friend Eric's place. His mom would babysit me on Saturday mornings when my mom was working at the newspaper. And we would watch all kinds of things. I don't remember a lot of it. I mean, obviously Ninja Turtles was hugely formative for me. It defines my love of pizza and of Kung Fu.
I have the theme song in my paper.
And wrestling. Oh, man. We were super into Hulk Hogan. That was like old school wrestling, like Hulk Hogan, yeah. Ultimate Warrior, Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase, the Macho Man Randy Savage, like super old school stuff. You know, that was when Andre the Giant was still wrestling. Like, I remember the first Royal Rumble. And then I proceeded to not care about it for years until I rediscovered it through a wrestling podcast, and now I listen to a wrestling podcast. Which we'll link in the show notes, because it's really cool.
Super good.
But... No, like, eventually I would go on and we would get YTV, which is, like, the Canadian kids' channel. Mm-hmm. And they had, like, VJs. Because there was Tarzan Dan and VJ Phil, and all of whom, I believe, have gone on to have real careers. Mm-hmm. But all the shows I remember...
Beast Wars.
I never watched Beast Wars.
Oh.
No. Totally missed me. I'm older than you.
That is true.
Botsmaster. First show I ever saw that had a rap song at the beginning, and I was like, ooh, and it's got fucking robots. This is great. I remember import shows like Sailor Moon, Samurai Pizza Cats,
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that, but no, like, a lot of it was like really weird stuff. I remember things like Squawk Box, which is this like just really esoteric kids comedy show. It was sketch comedy with kids,
mm-hmm.
and the jokes were clearly aimed at children. Because grown-ups were just like, "What is this? What is going on?" And kids are just like kids of my age at the time were like, this is the funniest shit. It's interesting to me so far that nobody has mentioned The Simpsons. I remember the first few Simpsons episodes, and I remember liking The Simpsons for a while until I started hating it.
I watched some a little bit more of his older. Actually, if anything, I watched King of the Hill more than I watched The Simpsons growing up.
Not me. There was a we used to have a challenge in high school, which was we could go when we got back to whichever friend's place. It was that you could turn the TV on at any time and find an episode of The Simpsons on. And that was the when TV in Ontario started having 50 channels. Mm-hmm. And so you could just any channel at some point would have The Simpsons. Huh. And we watched like it was just background noise.
Back before there was a channel, I don't even know if it's still around anymore. Now it used to be called Spike TV, which was like the men's channel. But before they did their programming shift to Spike and then their own original programming, they had TNN, I think it was what it was called. And that show was, or that program or network showed a lot of Star Trek and a lot of CSI. And so I remember when CSI blew up and then it became like kind of syndicated, you could flip and you'd find either an episode of CSI and then much later on it was Criminal Minds.
Yep.
And you could pretty much just like cycle through the channels and find those two shows and or Star Trek. So for me, that was glorious. When I was watching all three of those shows, it was amazing.
Yeah, I watched a ton of Star Trek as a kid. Like back to the point where when I had like a dial television with an aerial, like, you'd watch Star Trek and Star Trek The Next Generation specifically. But thinking of kids shows I watched, I didn't watch a lot, or at least that I remember. Like there's a lot of them in the background for my head, like Carmen Sandiego and DuckTales and Gummy Bears.
Chippendale, yeah.
By the time stuff started getting CG, so stuff like Beast Wars, which was done entirely in CG, Animorphs.
Reboot?
Reboot was in my era. But I also remember a show, and I'll try and dig it up. It was on YTV, and I don't remember the name, but all they did, it was just sort of several YTV VJs. Which is short for video jockey. Arguably, we are now VJs. Mm-hmm. Maybe. But they just talked about shit that was cool. And I learned a bunch about like cutting-edge comic books that I could not afford to buy or read. So stuff like Bone and Gen 13. And like that was when Gen 13 was new.
Yeah.
Wow. Music and things like that, and I was just like, it was just a show about like these reasonably hip 20 somethings being like, this is the shit we're into right now, seems cool. And you were like, as a child, you know, I was like 15 or something, being like, that does seem cool, you seem like cool people, I want to hang out.
Ted, you were going to say something?
Yeah, as a cricket, you just solved a mystery that I've it's been for like 16, 17 years.
How did I get so
every
cool?
Every now and again, we'd have programs come on the TV, and before they started, it'd be like a blank screen and just a thing in the corner that said YTV, and I didn't know why.
You were importing Canadian broadcasts.
I just discovered why.
That's amazing.
That's Mono Canada right there.
The only one I ever watched I knew definitely was Canadian was the adaptation of the Redwall books. I knew that was Canadian.
Yeah.
But I didn't know about, and yeah, like you just mentioned like stuff that you just talked about. I'm like, I saw that and had the YTV thing and my mind's just been blown.
Yep, that's where I watched Bots Master.
Occasionally like random channels have them on. Since I was little, I kept seeing this thing and wondering why this thing popped up and only some stuff, and now that explains it.
Yeah, YTV is a Canadian channel. Wow. It was interesting, like, I didn't have anyone else. I'm an only child. I was a single parent. My mom doesn't watch TV, like, ever. This has just never been a thing that she's been remotely interested in. Mm-hmm. So I never had to compete with anyone else for the TV. I never had to fight with anybody over it. I just, like, TV is just a thing that I'd turn on and watch whatever I wanted. And, like, we were pretty early on, we were a house with two TVs because we'd picked up a bunch of old ones. Mm-hmm. So we were just getting broadcast TV, but I could have any TV that I wanted. Mm-hmm. You know, sort of just on my TV. I used to watch golf. to help me get to sleep.
Remember, like, the first Skybox. And Cartoon Network was channel 37. I still remember that.
I was gonna say, yeah, channel 50, we had Cartoon Network.
44 was space, 46 was comedy.
47, TBS.
Yeah. And 50 was comedy, or was cartoons.
Yeah. Well, and then there was the Cartoon Network proper out of the States. That had, like, a lot of Hanna-Barbera reruns.
I never had the fancy American
show. That wasn't me. That was my grandparents, and they had satellite C-band. So I would watch that and Reading Rainbow. And then Dexter's Laboratory and all the shows. So Johnny Bravo. We are forgetting, like, the perennials of, like, Dragon Ball Z, Dragon Ball, and stuff like that. And yeah, I was just old enough. I was just too old to get into, like, Pokemon, but I still got into Digimon and Yu-Gi-Oh! And stuff, because they appealed just to my sensibility, so. We are starting to fall into I told you, give me enough time, and I'm going to start coming up with stuff, man, as well. Jesus. So, let's move on to the final topic, games we played. And not just video games. We can talk about video games, so we can make a whole separate podcast of the old games that we played, but what else did we play?
So, Theo, you're from Scotland, again.
Yes.
Tell us of your strange foreign footy cricket.
Oh, God. Things I remember playing as a kid. Like, I remember I was saying before, like, I think I was about primary five, so about eight, nine. Our school, money came from somewhere, and for each year group, they bought, like, a basket of different things, like skipping ropes, and those, like, pads with the Velcro, each with the ball back and forth, and all sorts of stuff. And there was four classes in each year, and it would rotate week by week which class got the basket of stuff. So it became a big, huge thing. It's like, oh my god, yes, we've got this cool stuff to play with. And we'd make up random little games with it. Like, if you could chuck the ball and catch it so many times, it was a certain thing. Or if somebody dropped it, they had a forfeit they had to do or whatever. And that was a whole thing. And then, like, the biggest thing at school was when it was nice weather, so sort of like May, June. We occasionally got nice weather in Scotland. If it was a nice afternoon, and, like, the teacher was like, okay, if he's done our work for today, or we can go out and play rounders. And rounders is basically a simplified version of baseball. There would be people's jumpers as bases, and you have two teams. One team would be batting, one team would be fielding. And it was like a plastic bat and a little tennis ball, and you had to play. You hit it as far as you could and try and run as far around the bases as you can. And at that sort of time, like, my dad occasionally played cricket for local clubs, so my sister and I had learned how to play cricket because osmosis or something, I don't know. But it turned out I was really good at hitting the ball just far enough that I could get it away from the fielders, but it wasn't, like, out of bounds, like in the janitor's garden or something. And even though I was always bigger built, like, I was one of the taller people in my year, believe it or not. And I was always quite awkward about it, but this is one game I was quite good at. On occasion, I could get home runs and stuff, so it was quite a good. I enjoyed that. And then, like, when we went to my grand's, my grand lives in a place called Gowk's Hill, just outside Edinburgh. It's a tiny little place. And there's two games we used to play there. One we were allowed to play, and one we weren't. The one we were allowed to play was Kirby, which was a person would stand on the other side of the street, and you'd have, like, a soccer ball, football, and you had to bounce off the other person's curb and then catch it in the air again. And you got 1 point, you bounced off the curb, 5 points if you caught it. And if you missed it, it was like the other person's turn. Mm-hmm. So we used to play that until a car came and you'd, like, get out of the way of the cars. And remember when we played weren't supposed to, it was Chappie Door Run. Which is basically Chappie Door Run. You would go to the neighbour's house and knock on the door and then leg it. So before they answered the door.
Oh, yeah.
Nick, we call it, I think, what? Nicky Nicky Nine Doors?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah,
we weren't supposed to do that, but we did it anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what I like. And then, like, when we moved to our new street here, because it's a bit of a quieter street, it's only five houses, so we used to play football, like soccer, out in the street quite a bit. Very sort of not at all strict way of playing it. Like, if it bounced off the wall, sometimes it was out, sometimes it wasn't, and it was just
casual
sort of,
rules enforcement.
Yeah, it was very chill. It's good fun.
Yeah, no. So we don't really have street soccer in Canada, or street footy, or whatever you would refer to it as.
Yeah.
But I do come from a long-standing Canadian tradition of kids growing up playing road hockey, where you make a net out of whatever you got, you get sticks out of whatever you got. Some kids have real hockey sticks, some kids don't. You use, like, a book bag and your hat to play goalie. Mm-hmm. You really hope you don't catch a slap shot on your thumb. Mm-hmm. And you just sort of go. Same with neighborhood baseball. We never had enough money for real baseball, so we used a tennis ball. Mm-hmm. Or real bats. So do whatever you can. I have one bat. And we had like four bats in the whole neighborhood. Mm-hmm. The day that somebody got a glove was revolutionary. Well, or you'd get a glove that fit, because you'd get a glove from like your older brother, mm-hmm. Or your dad or something. And that was most of the kids I knew. That's what they had. But it doesn't fit. You got to grow into it. And even then, baseball glove fit is really tricky. And as a person who has no brothers and no father, I didn't really have a place until I inherited a glove from another kid. But yeah, no, that was the game that I always played in gym class, the game that in which I shone, was King's Court, which is like an evolved form of dodgeball. I am very large. On this podcast, I appear to be larger than Huck, but I'm not.
I slouch.
He slouches. He's actually like 4 inches taller than me. But I'm quite large, and I have always been one of the bigger kids in class. And I have this the virtue, I guess, of being large and somewhat graceful. And I can keep my feet. Juggling at a very early age probably helps with that a whole bunch. But the result is that somehow the biggest kid in class, me, would dominate King's Court. Like, all you have to do is keep your feet, not get hit by stuff, throw balls. Mm-hmm. These are things that I am pretty good at. And so it would be really funny. Like, last people standing, you'd always have, you know, the super athletic kid in your class, because you always had one of those. Mm-hmm. And like they were super athletic, they were super competitive, and they were not going to lose this game no matter what. Mm-hmm. even if your side is losing, that person remains. The next person is the super bendy kid, the kid who's just like is a human elastic band, and so their movements are sufficiently unpredictable that they're impossible to anticipate. And then me. No one has any fucking idea how I got there. But I spend enough time avoiding people that I am impossible to touch. And no, it was a good time. Like as a kid who did not often shine in physical activities at school, it was good to have that moment once in a while. And now the game we weren't allowed to play. You brought up Kirby before and we didn't really know about it. It's not a culturally Canadian thing. But Ryan, did you ever play Red Ass in school?
Yep. We called it Red Butt. We weren't allowed to swear.
Yeah, so. We weren't allowed to swear either. Yeah. We called it Red Ass.
Yeah, we played that.
But, you know, it was where you would throw it, you would throw a tennis ball at a wall. And, like, the rules are, I think, are very vague.
Yeah.
But you had to throw a tennis ball at a wall and catch it. Either in your hat or in your hand. Hmm. Before it bounced on the ground, or before it got more than one bounce. Mm-hmm. And if it bounced and then you caught it, you got a strike against you. And if you just caught it, then it would clear all your strikes or something like that. And if you had enough strikes, I think it was 4 or 3, something like that, you were the red ass.
See, and we called that donkey, but we played it slightly differently.
And you would have to stand against the wall while everybody who was playing threw the tennis ball at your ass.
Oh no, we didn't do that. That's horrible.
Yeah, that was why it was called Red Ass.
I think in our version of the rules, it was you threw the ball, and if you tried to catch it and you fumbled it, you had to run and touch the wall before somebody else recovered the ball and threw it. So they weren't hitting you. It was you had to run and touch the wall before the other person threw the ball and it bounced off the wall.
Yeah, but it would always be, you'd always get that kid who would aim for your hand.
Yeah.
So you're reaching up to touch the wall, and this tennis ball just slams into your metacarpals.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, this is what pain feels like. And this is why you weren't allowed to play that game.
Yeah. So I think it was 4 strikes for B-U-T-T for us. So
It was British Bulldog.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Which was so super banned.
Yep.
In Canadian schools that I do not even know how to play it. All I know is that it exists and that it was super unbelievably banned.
Mm-hmm. We were allowed to play it when we were primary 7 and we were allowed down on the grass at playtime. Because, like, where my school sits, it sits on top of a hill and all around the school is, like, concrete playgrounds.
Ah.
Super banned playing it on there. Because I think, I remember primary 5, I think 4 people broke their arm, 1 person broke his leg, someone scorned their head off the railings. It's only like a matter of like 2 weeks. This game was super banned. When we played down in the grass, it was 2 trees were far enough apart that they could be the lines either side, and you had the line in the middle of people who were trying to catch you. So we're allowed to play in the grass because, like, it's a bit like a rugby tackle on the grass and it wasn't so, like, going to kill you. But yeah, no, it was super banned at our school.
No, I remember all the playground games. I remember, like, it was never institutional or anything like that. Like, it was always weird shit. Like, it was playing pretend or things like that. But the one I distinctly remember was one year I was in, like, the third grade. Yeah, it would have been the third grade. And we got a new portable at school. Mm-hmm. And behind that portable was a sand pit. It wasn't very big. It was, like, 5 feet across.
My God, sand pit.
And, like, September, 5 dudes in, like, the four, like, grade 3 through grade 5 were like, we're starting a motherfucking sumo league. And for, like, 3 weeks solid, we had a sumo league.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Like, you would get in the sand pit with somebody else, and it wasn't, like, it wasn't violent in that sense. It was, but it was like, you had to grip them and move them and get them out of the sand pit. There were kids that did commentary.
Like, oh my God.
That was where I got my start, was talking shit during the sumo league.
Oh, that's so cool. Dang. I wish we had a sand pit at our school. Actually, no, there's like 700 kids at our school would wreck it.
Yeah, no, two of my friends, Jose and Navaz, were, like, super big into sumo, which was really, and it was interesting because, like, most of the like, the bigger kids and, like, the bully kids were strictly barred from playing.
Yeah.
Like, if schoolyard bullies came around, sumo just dispersed. It was like, no, you're unwelcome here.
Yeah.
This is not for you. Huck, games you played.
Yeah, I'll try to make it really quick. So we played a lot of those games. We also played, I think we called it 500. The one where one person would get the ball and everybody else would gather on the other side of the field and you'd throw pop flies and call out, like, 100. And whoever caught it would get that many points, and whoever got to 500 first would trade spots with that person. What else did we play? Horse. We play horse.
Played horse.
With basketball, just you call shots, and the next person that misses it gets a letter.
Yeah.
We played tetherball, which we didn't have any of those in the States, but we didn't have recess in the States, so it was a little different. But tetherball is just a pole that has a rope or a chain attached to it, and then you get the ball and you attach it to the rope, and then the idea was two people would try to wrap the tether ball around the post by just striking the ball. So then there'd be rules, like you weren't allowed to cross the line or you weren't allowed to touch the rope, you had to only hit the ball, and, you know, sometimes you were allowed to, like, do setups, but, you know,
so none of my schools,
yeah,
I went to a bunch of schools as a kid and none of them were trusted with a tether ball.
Yeah,
we barely were trusted with a seesaw.
Let's see what else. I guess the big one that we played was a variation on your King's Court, but it was Medic. So this is like dodgeball, but instead of the King's Court, which I believe, like, in King's Court, if you get out, you're allowed to go to the other side and to their back line.
Yeah, and if you retrieve a ball, like if a ball makes it to you, you can throw that ball from the back line.
Yeah, and were you allowed back into the game?
Yeah, that got you back in.
So this one is a variation on that idea, except when you are when you get out, when you get hit, you just sit down where you get hit. You're not allowed to go to the other side. And in that space at the back of either team is a free space where they had a medic. And it was one person, and we only played medic where you had, it's like a little rolly board. The board's maybe a foot by a foot, plastic, and it had wheelies on the bottom. And so that person would be safe in the zone, but any time a person was out, they had to run out to the person, get them to sit on the wheelie platform, and then they had to pull them back to the safe zone, and that would rescue them, and then they would go out and play again. So the idea is you get people out, and then when the medic comes out, you try to hit the medic, because once the medic's out, that's it. You're not allowed to refresh your team, mm-hmm. and you just go until you eliminate the other team. So that was the version of dodgeball that we often enjoyed playing. But if your school didn't have those little wheelie small boards, then yeah.
Pretty sure those boards are just mounts for wheeling chairs around.
They're smaller than those.
Okay. Before. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, these ones were dedicated, like, you were like allowed to sit on it. Like, it was meant for, like, a tiny little child ass that you could push each other around on these wheelie things.
I have no idea.
Think of a skateboard cut in half and it's about a foot by a foot. But the wheels went in any direction. Like, it's not like a skateboard, they're fixed wheels, so. So those were some of the games we played, and I imagine I could come up again with a list of more games that we played, but this has been a long episode. We should probably start to wind it down a bit.
Oh, man. Theo, where can we find you online?
Twitter, usually, at Captain Wordbeard. It's probably the best place to find me.
All right. Huck, how about you?
RJ Huckle, you can find me on the Twitters, R Huckle on Instagram, or just dropping me a line in the comment section down below, and you can definitely hit me up there.
Yes, leave your comments with your favorite childhood games. We may even attempt to play some in a future video. That sounds amazing. And
oh, it's so good you guys to play Rounders when you come here.
Scotland, oh, British Bulldog.
No.
Hey, I'm an expert.
We have old people knees now. We don't play British Bulldog. We have old people knees now.
Yeah.
I like my knees. I need them. They would hold up all my stuff.
Oh, dear.
No, you can find me on Twitter at Concept Crucible and at JimTingle.com. Or, as Huck mentioned, in the comments below, regardless of where you are, unless you're listening on iTunes, in which case you can find us at ConceptCrucible.com and comment. We will see you later. I'm Jim.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Theo.
We're signing off.
Stay awesome. We're dancing, by the way. You can't see us.